Hello and welcome to the Footvey English podcast in collaboration with World Football Index, a unique mix of fandom and journalism. Footvey English is your one-stop shop for all things Venezuelan football in the English language, from the men's to the women's and the domestic leagues to the national teams.
We are at the halfway point of the Liga Footvey 2023 season. 14 games have been played by all clubs across 15 game weeks, and the league is currently on its four-week break. Here to discuss the first half of the season with me is Footvey English regular co-host Dominic Bisogno. Dominic, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm very excited to talk about the season so far. It's been a really interesting, unexpected twist and turn journey, and it's been really great covering it.
Yeah, and I think in contrast to the past couple of seasons, it's been a lot harder to follow the league. With the change in the TV broadcasting rights, fewer games being streamed on YouTube, Gold TV becoming a little less accessible, and ultimately the lack of coverage on Instat and Wyscout. But on the flip side, for people like you and I, Kevin, and people inside Venezuelan football, I think it's put an extra pressure on us to be even more aware and focus more intently, because it's far harder to look back. And if you miss a performance, there's not like, oh, let's go see how that player did by looking at the numbers. How have you found the first half of the season, following it, not just as a fan, but as someone sort of collating what's going on for the public through Footvey English?
Yeah, it's interesting. The list you provided there, those are all very valid reasons that I think everybody, including us, you know, I think we've probably seen less of the minute by minute of this season than maybe years past. And we've had to often take turns more so with coverage more than maybe years past. And there is a downside to that. That being said, the season itself, I've really enjoyed. There's been just some really remarkable performances, some really entertaining games. And so I would love a world where everybody could access everything. And maybe that's something that's down the line somewhere, but for what it's worth, the product that people are getting, I think, has been really fun this year. So I found it really entertaining. I do miss the days of everything just being on YouTube and all that sort of stuff, but obviously that's not how the world works. So I've had a lot of fun watching the season, given some of the barriers that are there.
And from the very start of the season, we've had a league leader, that not only raced into an early lead, but maintained and built upon it almost game after game. And that is Academia Puerto Cabello. Safe to say, hands down, the revelation of the season, based on the increase of their performance from last season to this, and even two seasons ago to now. But not overly a surprise, considering who they brought in as head coach and the quality of players that they brought in. What can you tell us about Puerto Cabello's first 6 months of 2023?
They've been pretty remarkable. In league play, the team has been near perfect. Their current record as a recording is 11 wins, 2 draws, and 1 loss. They've played exciting soccer a lot of the time. Brought in, like you said, several players that are close to Chita San Vicente. They've also used the best of the players that are already there. For example, a star like Luis Hernandez, who of course was already at the club for several years. And really just top to bottom, from Hernandez, who's this young forward, to a goalkeeper like Romero, who's this more experienced piece they've brought in. They've really just brought the most out of each player, it feels like. Playing really entertaining football, getting into the group stage for the first time of international football as well. Just really giving the club an amazing season. And anyway, it's interesting, you mentioned, of course, the dominance they've shown. It really makes it last season feel like when San Vicente, of course, was at Zamora, returning to Zamora, and they had a very dominant regular season. It almost makes that season look like a prototype to what they're accomplishing this season. This season looks, far and ahead, even more dominant, even more clean than Zamora did last year, with some of the same players, by the way, as this current squad at Academia Puerto Cabello. So, it's just been a really impressive year. I think everyone expected them to do well with San Vicente in charge, but I'm not sure that I ever thought that they would be such far and ahead of everybody else. It's been a really admirable start.
And yesterday, Liga Footbay's official Twitter account posted a really interesting graphic thanks to their new data partnership with Stats Perform, which we've spoken about on at least two podcasts prior to today, so we won't really go into too much about it today. But the graphic was very insightful. Academia Portugal, head and shoulders at the top of the table. Their points difference between themselves and Tatra in second is 9. And after 14 games, you know, that's a pretty nice cushion. But the graphic was insightful for and interesting for me for two main reasons. Firstly, Academia Portugal have the most direct style of football in the league. You could interpret from this data. The meters per second that they advance the ball up the pitch is the quickest at around 2.2. And interestingly, by their average passes per possession, they're in the bottom 3 or 4 teams in the league. They're the only team below the average for passes per possession that are in not just the top 4 of the table, but the top half of the table. The only team below the average in the top half. So they're playing a very direct style of football, but also they lose possession pretty regularly. They're averaging under 4 passes per possession. So for them, and again, no real surprise to anyone familiar with Chita San Vicente's football, at least in recent years, very direct, very vertical, not afraid to lose the ball, not afraid to play a game full of transitions. The other teams around them in terms of you know, lower end passes per possession are Useve, Mineiros, Zamora, Rayo Zuliano, all the teams struggling around the bottom, plus Monagas, who, interestingly, going into the mid-season break, are as low as 9th. And we're talking about the current subcampeones, the current runners-up of the league. And Angostura, who I think we'll talk about next. Angostura, Academia, maybe a revelation. Angostura, a surprise?
Their current table position is more or less in the area I think we both saw them competing for, that sort of right in the middle. But what I will say is, it's more, what's surprising is kind of the way they've gone there. Angostura have had, you know, a really good start to the season. They did tail off a little bit and have recovered since then, again, getting a couple of wins recently. But they've played some really engaging football. They've really made the most out of young talent. And I think they're just playing a little more dynamic, ambitious game than perhaps we were expecting. I think when they won Liga Footvey 2 last season, they were looked at as sort of a difference from the Useves and Hermanos's of these sort of really entertaining second division teams that were going to break the mold. I think people saw them as a more traditional, perhaps more conservative, lower division team coming up into Liga Footvey. And I think they've broken that mold a little bit now that they're actually here. Got some really big wins against good teams. They've been incredibly competitive. They've been anything but a team to walk over. And I think, you know, they're in 8th as we record. I think we kind of expected them to be somewhere between 8th and 11th.
Just brought it up. We had them at the start of the season, our thread on the 3rd of February. We had our prediction for them as 9th to 12th. Nice. So they are outperforming us at the moment by, well, they're level on points with 9th. So they're outdoing us on goal difference.
But I think for me, it's the way they've done it. It's the way they've gotten to this place is really what's impressed me. So, yeah, I mean, a surprise in a slightly different way, but yeah, a really great start to them. And they're, you know, to be clear, their first ever season in the first division as well.
And one thing we did, I think, predict accurately about Angostura's season is, as we do for every team at the beginning of the season, we put down who we think their young star is going to be. Before I say who we said, shout out to Aldri Contreras, only 18 years old, and he's had a fantastic first half of the season for them. He's one of just 2 2004-born players to have been selected in Liga Footbay's Team of the Week on more than one occasion. But the young star of the season that we put down, and I think is fulfilling our prophecy, if you like, is Glaika Mendoza. As of a couple of weeks ago, I think at the end of game week 13, He was leading the tables for dribbles. He was leading the tables for foul suffered, second for dribbles, so indicative of a player that's very progressive, and also in the top 10 for shots at goal. Hasn't yet converted those shots in goal to a regular flow of goals, but you need to be in the position to shoot in the first place. And although we don't have access to the stats, I think his XG to G would be pretty healthy this season. Moving away from Academia Puerto Cabello and Angostura, let's take a brief look at the top four and whether that's kind of what we expected at the start of the season. Puerto Cabello lead leaders, trailed by Deportivo Táchira in second, Carabobo in third, and Caracas in fourth. What have you made of the race for the top four, as it were?
Well, it's definitely taken some twists and turns already, right? There's a period of time where Monagas looked quite good in that top four. I believe there's a long period of time where they were actually second to Academia Puerto Cabello. Obviously, they've dropped off. The current top four that we have, I don't necessarily think it surprises either of us in the sense that there's nothing baffling about it, but I do think that Carabobo, I think, are maybe slightly outperforming what we expected this season, just in that they've been a little extra competitive, and they've had some signings that have really come up good for them. Táchira and Caracas, I think we both thought were going to be in the mix. I think to the point of some of the recent statistics that you've been talking about, I think those reflect very interestingly on Táchira, which maybe you can go into more. But I think these teams are all sort of the ones that we thought were going to be in the mix. I think Monagas have dropped off quite a bit. I think they maybe would be a team that I would have thought would be there instead of Carabobo, for example. But I think it's been a very competitive top four, despite the fact that first place obviously has quite a gap. And it's been really interesting to see the flows of this. Caracas, for example, a team that started not necessarily great, albeit they weren't necessarily losing a lot, but they were drawing a lot. They've kind of grown into that top four. So it's already been interesting to see some of those twists and turns. Portuguesa, a team that spent a couple of weeks in the top four. Metro, a team that's really trying to get into the top four and very close to doing so. I have a feeling this top four is actually going to look very different by the end of the season, just because of how fluid it's been. But I've been really impressed by Táchira, Carabobo, and Caracas so far. I think they've done a very good job of putting together a competitive season, of making me feel like they have a chance at competing with Puerto Cabello. Some of them have not played each other, no one's played each other twice yet. So, you know, there's still room to grow there. But yeah, I mean, I think it's been a really entertaining race so far for those positions.
Yeah, and to pick up on a couple of points that you highlighted well there. Firstly, Monagas, as I said, then they're as low down as ninth, surprisingly, not in the top half of the table at all. And due to a format change this season, although never say never with last minute changes in Liga Football, they wouldn't even be qualifying for the Sudamericana playoffs at the end of the season. They've won one in their last eight league games, and that one win was Academia Puerto Cabello's only defeat of the season. Right. Monagas came from behind to beat Academia Puerto Cabello 3-2 in Maturin, and that game saw the not emergence but the headline performance of young Leandro Rodriguez, 2005 born, who scored a 2-minute brace to turn the game on its head. Their most recent three games, Monagas, they have failed to score in a 2-0 home loss to Metropolitanos, a 1-0 away loss to Rayo Zuliano, probably safe to say a surprise, and in their most recent game, again, a home defeat 2-0 to Caracas. No goals in three games. Not as surprising as it may sound for the subcampeones. Abdiel Arroyo is a striker that I have made no attempt to hide my dislike for. I really don't think he has the level anymore, particularly the level that we require of foreign players to come in and make a difference this season. And maybe we'll touch upon the level of foreigners in the league later in the podcast. And Basante, who is as raw and as potential filled as you may like from a young striker in Liga Football. But, you know, he's under 20. This is still only his second season at top flight level, heavily rotated last season. Probably going to be a top Liga Football player in the future, but is still bedding in. A steady flow of goals is very much what Monagas need in the second half of the season. They have only scored 14 in 14 games. Only Portuguesa with 13 have scored fewer in the top 10 of the season, top 10 of the table, sorry. And in general, the only other two teams that have scored fewer than them are Mineros with 12, rock bottom of the league, Richard Blanco at the age of 41 with exactly half those goals at 6, and Useve with 10 goals. So not looking great for Monagas, but last week the club itself did issue one of those football manager-esque style "we are with you" letters about Johnny Ferreira, their head coach, the longest serving head coach in Liga Football as it stands. Picking up on another good point you made, Caracas, they too, like Puerto Cabello, have only lost one game this season, but 12 points separate them due to Caracas drawing 8 games, and 8 being a league high. They've drawn 8 of 14 games, many of which came at home as well. And interestingly, the only two games Caracas have lost this season, one in the league and one in Copa Sudamericana, have both come against Puerto Cabello, and both come thanks to Loifer Hernandez goals. So Cheetah San Vicente really being a thorn in his ex-side this season. What I wanted to talk about next, though, is outside the race for the top four, which after the 30-game season will break away into a championship stage to decide the winner, is what happens after that. In the past season or two, 5th to 12th have broken off after 30 games into two groups of four, and the top two from each group then enter the Sudamericana playoffs. This season, as it stands, that is not happening. It will simply be 5th, 6th, 7th and 8th that will qualify for the Copa Sudamericana playoffs at the start of next year. So 9th, 10th, 11th and 12th, four positions in the table that last year would have given you a shot at Sudamericana, are this year essentially meaningless. And like I said, Monagas are currently, although only the midpoint, outside of those positions, as are Estudiantes, who are in the Sudamericana group stages this year, and Zamora, who was in the Libertadores playoffs this year. So it is a big case in point. So, Dominic, where would you like to take this podcast next?
Well, I do think that there's some interesting things happening in terms of the bottom of the table. I do think that it's too early to quite call a relegation battle yet, but the brewing relegation battle for the second half of the season, I think, is an interesting one right now, particularly with Useve and Mineros basically as being the protagonists of that, Zamora and Rayo Zuliano kind of on the verge of it. I think it's interesting because, you know, Useve obviously started the year quite poorly, I think it's fair to say. They were bottom for quite a long period of time. Mineros are currently bottom as we record with eight points, Useve with 11. And that twist, which to some degree has been parallel with the return of Sasso as manager of Useve, has been a really interesting one to watch. Mineros is a team that I think has a lot of young talent on it. You've mentioned already Richard Blanco, who of course is a bit of a legend for this league and has continued actually to be quite good this season despite his age, which is basically what we say every year, and has been quite good for them, gotten them a few very important goals and some important points. It does seem, however, like Mineros can't quite figure out how to put those pieces together to get results, which is what Useve looked like, I think, the first part of the year, and they've sort of started to solve that puzzle. So for me, it's really interesting to see this relegation battle, to see Zamora so close to it, to see Zuliano, certainly part of it, although maybe less a part of it. What's interesting to me about Rayo Zuliano this year is that they are certainly close to the relegation zone, but they don't feel like a team that's going to get relegated to me. They just seem like a team that's going to float right above that. Yeah. And so again, those sort of four teams, I know Hermanos are kind of close to that crowd as well, but it's really those four teams to me that feel like they're in that conversation right now. I think it's just played out to be a very interesting sort of back and forth between all of them.
Yeah, I think the thing with Rayo Zuliano is, although they are down there, their performances, and particularly a few of their results, for example, beating Monagas 1-0, they have, I think, enough in the tank to stay up. They've got quite a few exciting young players like Colina, for example, who did well at the under-17 Sudamericano, got a goal against Argentina. And a couple of the players that have come across with them from Zulia, for example, Jesus Paz, Adrian Montañez, the giant centre-back who's, you know, worked his way into the team now and is starting alongside Luis Parra a very capable centre back and the captain of the team. And then, sorry, I merged into Angostura there. Ignore me. Going back to Ray Zuliano. Yes, Colina, exciting. And then at the back, sorry, the experience, what I meant to say is Valdez, their goalie. Separate from their new Liga Footvee compatriots, Angostura, who were the other team promoted. I'll add Angostura winning and Ray Zuliano buying their way into the top flight to replace Zulia. Aside from the league, we've also had a bit of continental and international action. We'll get the bad news out of the way first, if you like. So we'll talk about Copa Libertadores and Sudamericana. In the group stages of Libertadores, we have Monagas, who, to be fair to them, have put in some good performances, but just haven't been able to get wins across the line, which was the story in their last game. And again, they're struggling for a consistent source of goals. And joining them in the Copa Libertadores, making their competition debut, Metropolitanos, 2022's Liga Footvee champions, both winless. And in Copa Sudamericana, we've got Academia Puerto Cabello, who are storming the league, but struggling in the Sudamericana group stages, alongside Estudiantes de Mérida, who I don't think it's a surprise to anyone are struggling this year. It was almost a minor miracle in itself, that they managed to beat Deportivo Táchira to get the group stage position in the first place, beating them on penalties after a late equaliser. However, as always, when I'm negative, Dominic normally has some positives to bring to the surface. Are there any positives from the Libertadores and Sudamericana campaigns this year?
Well, the obvious, very brief positive for clubs like Metro and Puerto Cabello is simply the matter of making history for their clubs, obviously reaching this stage. That mm-hmm. of course, is something to celebrate for them. What I would say, this is particularly with Estudiantes and Monagas, whose league form has particularly dropped off since the group stage of the competition started, whereas I would say Metro and Puerto Cabello's hasn't particularly. What I would say is the silver lining for Monagas and Estudiantes is that these group stages will be done soon. And when they are, I think they're going to probably get at least a mild bump in their league form. I think, you know, particularly Monagas, who I think seem like they're a little more together than Estudiantes in terms of game-to-game performances. They've gotten some good draws at the very least in the Libertadores this year. I think as soon as they aren't having to play these games, they will probably be much more competitive for at least those Sudamericana spots. And so, you know, for them, I think that's, I mean, the club I'm sure will want to try and get that third spot in their Libertadores group again, the Sudamericana. But more realistically, I would say that the big thing to look forward to is having fresh legs again to focus on league play. Estudiantes, I think, also will benefit from that to some degree. Four teams have been really rough. I don't necessarily think there's a huge positive from open play at least for any of these four teams. I will say that, again, for Metro and Puerto Cabello, you have that history piece that is important to those younger teams. For Monagas and Estudiantes, I think it's a matter of, hey, this is a good experience for Monagas. You get some memorable draws. You play Boca Juniors at home and have a big game there, a huge crowd. But at the end of the day, it's kind of about, all right, well, we're going to have to move on from this and focus on league play again and maybe get some more points. So it's unfortunate that that's the tone that we have to talk about this campaign. Obviously, there's been years past where it's been a little more positive and exciting. But I think that's just the reality of how it's played out.
Yeah, and I think I do have a positive to bring to the table as well. And it's a nice little segue into what we'll discuss next. And that is David Martinez, 17-year-old David Martinez, who becomes the youngest Venezuelan to score in the competition and also got an assist last week. So already has a goal and an assist in the Copa Libertadores this year, 17 years old. And when he scored his goal, I don't know if it's changed since. I suggest it probably hasn't. But when he scored his goal, I think he became the youngest goal scorer in the Copa Libertadores this year in general. He only turned 17 in February, so it will be a hard to beat number in general. And as I said, perfect way to bridge into probably the last topic or penultimate topic of today's discussion, and that is the youth national team of Venezuela, or teams, shall we say. They've played the under 20 Sudamericano already this year, and the under 17s. And then next week we have the Toulon tournament beginning, and later in the year, the under 17 World Cup, which Chamitos qualified for by finishing fourth in the under 17 Sudamericano a month or two ago. And the star of that team was unquestionably David Martinez. Out of the two tournaments, obviously we qualified for the World Cup on one and narrowly missed out on the other, but we reached the final stage of both. Which generation are you more excited about? For me, I think it's still too early to tell with the under 17s, how they're looking 3 years. And the under 20s, quite a lot of people were disappointed with the performances. But what I took from it is, firstly, we still very nearly qualified for the World Cup. And to finish top four in CONMEBOL is not easy when you've got Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Chile, Peru. Like, it's a very difficult federation. And secondly, I didn't really blame the players too much for how things went. We set up negatively. The head coach, Colaccini's, you know, no longer with us. What did you make of the tournaments?
I think it's fair to say you're somewhat disappointed with the U20 result. I mean, yes, it didn't go wonderfully. I would say, to your question of, you know, like, which age group am I kind of still looking at? I think this U20 group is really good. I think they had a really bad tournament, but I think that, or not even really bad tournaments, probably harsh to be honest, but they had a rough tournament. I still think there's a ton of talent in it. I'm very curious to see who can step up in the Toulon tournament, which I think is a great opportunity to sort of refresh the conversation about of this age group, give them another chance to perform at a high level. The U17s, very exciting. David Martinez looks like an absolute hell of a player. And I'm really looking forward to any opportunity between the two tournaments that he gets. And to make any form of the World Cup, I think, is a big deal. So I think both achievements are wonderful. But I do think the U20s deserve excitement still. I know that they had a rough tournament, but I think there's aspects of that tournament that people are a little harsh about. I mean, people talk about how they, you know, they had to sort of barely make it out of the first stage, but they actually got more points out of the first stage of the tournament this year than the 2017 group did.
Oh, wow. I didn't know. Well, that's a great fact.
I just wanted to double check this, because I remember the 2017 group in the Sudamericana, in the first stage, they got through with four draws. They got 4 points from four draws. They didn't win a game. So,
wow. I didn't realize that word.
There's little things like that. There's little things like that you go, well.
And they went on to be the World Cup runners-up.
Exactly. A little bit of luck here, a little bit of fate there. You know, how close was this group to potentially actually looking a lot better than they looked, because they didn't make it to the World Cup and because there were some tough results in there. So, I think the margins have been really harsh on this group. I think there's a lot of talent. I mean, we're talking about guys, by the way, that are playing in good leagues and good levels around the world right now. It's not even a matter of our opinion. It's a matter of the fact that actual clubs clearly rate them. So again, I think the Toulon tournament is going to be a really great opportunity for those guys to have another chance to show themselves at a similar level to the world against some really interesting opposition. And so I'm really happy that that's going to be taking place and give those guys a chance. So, I mean, really, I think both tournaments are going to be must watches for Venezuelan football, obviously, through this year.
Yeah. And to point out from the, you know, from the under 20 Sudamericano, we're talking about the disappointment of not qualifying, but the under 20 World Cup is currently underway. The group stages are over, and in the 2, 4, 6, 8, in the final 16 teams, I shouldn't have needed to calculate that. In the final 16 teams, 5 of them are South American. 5 South Americans are in the final 16, practically a third. You've got Uruguay, you have Brazil, you have Colombia, you have Ecuador, and you have host Argentina. So just another reminder, the level in CONMEBOL is high, particularly at youth national team level. In the final few minutes of the podcast, because we have 3 minutes left, quickly looking ahead to next week and the Toulon tournament, 28 players are currently out in Girona in Spain in the pre-tournament training camp. That will be cut to 23, not necessarily the 28. For example, David Martinez isn't in the 28, but he may get called up to the team. I don't think he will, but you know, you don't have to be in this pre-module to get called to the final cut. We're in a group with France, who, like Venezuela, were finalists last year. They beat Venezuela, sadly. And we're in a group alongside Costa Rica and Saudi Arabia. The setup of the Toulon tournament means the three group winners of the three groups, A, B, and C, advance to the semis, and the best place second team. Venezuela being against France, who are technically hosts in the sense that the tournament is hosted in France every time it takes place. We are in a tough group, but we do play France last. So we have Costa Rica and Saudi Arabia to get out of the way first. And two wins in those first two games would set us up nicely to, if not win the group, which will be a tough call against France, at least be the best second place to get to the semi-finals. In the final minute and a half, Dominic, Toulon tournament, did you enjoy it last year? Looking forward to it again this year. What do you make of it?
Yeah, absolutely. The last Toulon tournament was a really fun watch. We got to see a lot of these young players step up in an interesting way, play the kinds of teams you wouldn't have necessarily seen them play normally, you know, your France's, for example. And so I'm really glad that the national team is taking part again this year. I think it's a big opportunity for some of the same players as last tournament and some new to show up, to shine. There's some guys that are still, you know, finding their way in clubs in Europe, for example, that I think could very much use this platform to reinvigorate a little bit of the momentum of their careers, or their playing careers. And
Segovia, Dani Perez.
Exactly. Huge examples there. And so I think it's a great opportunity, and particularly because of how the U20 campaign went. I think it's a big opportunity for these guys to show up, to play unique teams that are not necessarily going to be playing normally, and continue to show, you know, the nation, the globe, the world, the continued development of youth in Venezuelan football. I think that's what was really shown at the last tournament, and I think they have a great opportunity to do it again this year.
Perfect. Before we get cut off by the Time Lords, let's cut the podcast short. Thank you very much for your time, Dominic, and I hope anyone listening has enjoyed this episode.
Yes, thank you so much, everybody.